Beautiful. The microphone's right here. Okay. John, kill him in the head. Thank you. Love you.
I'm going to last 59 hours. And I can edit it. Not to edit it, so there's no problem. I can take off the parts. There's nobody speaking on right now. How long can we give you? How's that hour? How's your time today? That's the time.
Okay. What time's the next meeting start? What day you got for Princess?
10:30.
Okay, what time's the next meeting start?
15 minutes later, 10:30. So you gotta go for like 20 after.
Yeah, I don't want 20:25.
Okay.
Is it recording? Is it recording now?
Okay, where's Jason?
Okay, Jason, after we inspect the pit.
Hey, do you know what we're going to do? Maybe it's not a problem.
Probably, brother.
As soon as you know, I was right there, man. And I ran up here, and I ran up here, and they had me all over the place.
Hi, family. My name's Sylvia. I'm a grateful recovering addict.
That's cool. Rewards of this program. Welcome to the Laurel Mountain Highlands area of Narcotics Anonymous, 14th Annual Unity Retreat. We would like you to join us in celebrating the recovery and fellowship that we have come to know, need, and deserve in our lives. We encourage you to share in our NA Unity through your experience, strength, and hope in our wide variety of workshops. This is an open retreat. All are welcome to attend. However, we ask that only addicts share in the workshops. In accordance with our seventh tradition, we are fully self-supporting. Thank you for registering. We should remember that our actions this weekend are a direct reflection on Narcotics Anonymous as a whole. Let's carry the NA message, not the mess. What is the NA message? Our message is that an addict, any addict, can stop using drugs, lose the desire to use, and find a new way to live. Our message is hope, and the promise is freedom. When all is said and done, our primary purpose can only be to carry the message to the addict that still suffers, because that is all we have to give. That no addict anywhere need die from the horrors of addiction. The NA way. In Narcotics Anonymous, we are presented with a dilemma. When NA members identify themselves as addicts and alcoholics, cross addicts, or talk about living clean and sober, the clarity of the NA message is blurred. To speak in this manner suggests that there are two diseases, that one drug is separate from the rest. Narcotics Anonymous makes no distinction between drugs. Our identification as addicts is all-inclusive, allowing us to concentrate on our similarities, not our differences. To the press. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and film. If any member of the press are present, please come to the registration table where you will be referred to our public information chairperson. We respectfully ask that no pictures be taken during the Unity Retreat by the press. If any NA members are approached by the press, please refer them to the registration table. Remember, no one person represents NA. Please do not attempt to represent NA to the press alone. Please observe the no smoking policy in all buildings. I apologize for being late. There was a little confusion on no chairpersons for all the meetings for this time slot. So, hello again, everyone. My name is Sylvia, and I'm a grateful recovering addict. Welcome to this workshop entitled Sponsorship. Will you please help me open with a moment of silence for the addict who still suffers, followed by the we version of the Serenity Prayer. God, grant us the serenity to accept things we cannot change, the courage to change the things we can, and wisdom to know the difference. Could we please have the reading from up here at the podium of We Do Recover?
Hi, everyone. I'm Brandy. I'm an addict.
Hey, Brandy.
We do recover. When at the end of the road we find that we can no longer function as human beings, either with or without with or without drugs, we all face the same dilemma. What is there left to do? There seems to be this alternative. Either go on as best we can to the bitter ends, jails, institutions, or death, or find a new way to live. In years gone by, very few addicts ever had this last choice. Those who are addicted today are more fortunate. For the first time in history, a simple way has been proving itself in the lives of many addicts. It is available to us all. This is a simple, spiritual, not religious program known as Narcotics Anonymous.
Anonymous. Thank you, Brandy.
You're welcome.
Okay. Okay. I would like to introduce the first speaker. You know, like I said, they had a little bit of problems getting people to chair this, all the meetings in this time slot. And both these gentlemen I consider very close personal friends. So when I heard that they needed a chairperson for this, you know, I'm here to support them because they support me, and that's how we do in NA. That's what makes the fellowship keep going. So I would like to introduce the first speaker, Jason F. from Lima, Ohio.
Hey, my name's Jason. I'm an addict. It's a real pleasure to be here. I've never done anything like this before. I've given a bunch of leads, and I've given a hell of a lot of performances in my life for various reasons on various different stages all over the country. But it's a little different when you do something that really hits home to you. And tonight I have the pleasure of sharing on a topic that means probably more to me than anything else in this program. And I have the pleasure of sharing on this topic of sponsorship with my sponsor, John. And I have no idea what he's going to say, and I certainly don't know what the hell I'm going to say. But I have a feeling it's going to be real nice, and it's going to be a real pleasure to be here. He handed me his coin before I came up here, and I can't see it because it's like dark and shit, but I know what it says. On the back of it, it says, "No addict seeking recovery need ever die." And to me, like, that's really the goal of sponsorship, is that I look for somebody that has something that I want and somebody that's going to keep me from fucking dying. And when I got here, that wasn't what I wanted. The first sponsor I ever picked in NA, I picked him because he had the most clean time. And I figured if he had the most clean time, he was probably the best. And that was really the extent of my understanding of recovery. Suffice it to say, I went through about 7 or 8 sponsors in the first 6 years I was clean. And I developed some relationships with some of those men, and I made some friends, and I worked some steps, and I got a little better. But I never really got recovery. And at the end of it all, I chose to go get high. This time around, I've had one sponsor for the last 9.5 years, and it's been somebody that's always been one of my best friends. I haven't always gotten along with him. I certainly haven't always agreed with him. There've been a lot of instances where I flat out didn't like him, and there's been shit that he did that, you know, I said, you know, behind his back or to him, I said I didn't think that was right, and I'm not okay with that. When I came back into the rooms, though, I went to a meeting like I was trying to do, and I had a lot of resentments. It's tough to go from 6 years and know that you went through it all away by getting high one night and then spent the next 7 months trying to get clean again. And that's really not even exactly what I did. I spent the next 7 months knowing exactly what was wrong with me and just getting high anyway. But when I came back into the room, you know, this guy that's my sponsor today, he was a different person. And I walked up to him at the same meeting I've gotten all three of my 24-hour key tags at. It was a Tuesday night meeting at the old Newman Center in Indiana, PA. And I remember saying to him, I was like, what the hell's wrong with you? Like, what happened? Like, you're, like, different somehow. And he looked at me, and, you know, he wasn't being a smartass or anything else. He said, I work steps. And I didn't even hesitate. I said, well, do you think you could show me how to do that? Like, I know it's an uncomfortable thing because we've been friends and we have a history and, you know, we haven't always gotten along, but I want what you have. And it was the first time I really wanted what somebody had, and it didn't have to do with how long they were clean or what kind of car they drove or how hot the woman that they were dating was or how much money they made. It was literally about what this guy had, like inside, like in here, in his heart. And he said without hesitating, he said it'd be an honor. And I think maybe for that first three years that he was my sponsor, I might have called him four or five times, maybe more. I really don't remember that well. I know I didn't work any steps, and I know the best thing that I did was I just didn't take anything, and I didn't learn a whole lot about sponsorship. It wasn't that much different than the first 6 years that I was clean. But I very distinctly remember I played in a band. I was a professional musician for a while, and we just got back from a tour of the Midwest. And I had about 2 days to go see my family before we had to pack our shit up and get back in a bus and do a tour of the East Coast. And I was driving down to see my family, and I pulled over on an Indian reservation on the New York border between New York and Pennsylvania by Jamestown, New York. And I called my sponsor, and I'll be damned if he didn't answer the phone. And I said, hey, John, it's Jason. And he goes, hey, how's it going? And I said, are you still my sponsor? And I don't remember his exact words, but he said something to the effect of, yeah. And I said, well, John, nothing's wrong. Like, you know, I didn't get high, and I don't want to get high. I just feel like something's wrong, like something's missing. And I feel like there's something that has to do with recovery that I'm not getting. And I haven't taken anything. I'm around drugs and alcohol every day because I'm touring and shit, and I don't have any urges. I just feel like there's something that I should be getting out of my life right now that I'm not. And what it went back to was I knew that there was something different about him. Like, he changed. He went from being the man that he was for the first 4 or 5 years that I knew him to being somebody that had every character trait that I wanted to have and everything I wanted to possess. He was humble. He admitted that he did some things. He made some mistakes. He admitted that he was probably still making some mistakes and he was going to continue to make mistakes and that he was going to learn from those mistakes. And that was something that that I wanted. And so he said, well, what do you have? Like, do you have any books? And I said, I carry a Just for Today book with me, but I never look at it. And he goes, well, are you going to any meetings? And I said, no. I haven't been to a meeting in 18 months. And he said, why? And I said, well, I don't want to go to meetings because I don't want to get close to anybody because if they use, I don't want it to hurt me. And that was probably the first indication that I, you know, my self-centeredness was certainly not going anywhere and it had been there for a long time because I wasn't concerned about the addicts in the rooms. I was concerned about me and how they affected me. And that's okay. That's where I was at. And one of the things that my sponsor taught me and one of the things my sponsors instilled in me is that there's nothing wrong with being where I'm at right now. And there's nothing wrong with feeling how I'm feeling. What's important is that I just don't take anything and I'd be willing to do something about it and willing to make the next right move and put one foot in front of the other. I think the next break I had from touring was in November, and it was Thanksgiving, and my sponsor was, he drove down to see his family. His family still lived in Pittsburgh, and we went to a bar. It was the only place open on Thanksgiving Day, so we went to a bar and had coffee for about 3.5-4 hours, and it was the first time I'd had any amount of recovery in my life for, I don't even know, like a year or 2 years. Besides, like, occasionally when I was on the road, I'd hit a meeting, I'd stop in, and most of the time it wasn't because I needed it. It was to say, hey, I'm still clean, and kind of brag to myself. I don't think anybody was ever impressed with me, and I certainly wasn't fucking impressed with myself, but I went through a few here and there. And John told me, he said, you know, it's okay if we start working steps now. And I said, well, what do I do? And he goes, well, what do you have? And I said, well, I started carrying that that new book they have, that step working guide thing. I got one of those, and I have it. I was like, I don't know what to do with it, though. And he said, well, just read through it and start answering the questions. And told me the way he works steps is that he has some definitions for me, and he gave me, I think, 6 or 8 definitions, or maybe it was 10 or 12. I can't remember exactly. I think I honestly forgot to do them for the first 2 steps. And he was cool. He let me slide with that. He told me from the beginning that I was going to get out of this process of working steps what I wanted and what I didn't want to do and how much pork I didn't want to put into it. That was fine because it wasn't going to hurt him. It was only going to hurt me. And I liked that. You know, I liked that he wasn't going to, like, yell at me and tell me what to do and bitch at me and stuff. Told me to read the first step out of It Works How and Why, the Green and Gold book, and to read through the first step in a flat book and answer the questions. I think it was about a month that went by, and I had another, like, week off from touring, and I flew out to South Dakota to see some of my family that I hadn't seen in years. And my mom and the rest of my family stayed out there. I had to catch a flight back because I had to be on a bus the 26th of December. I had to be on a bus at 7 p.m. on the 26th to take off and go on a Midwest tour again. And I got to the airport in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, and I'm sitting there waiting for my plane, and there's nobody else sitting there. And I'm like, oh, this is going to be an empty flight. I'm going to be the only one on the plane. And it came time for my plane to come, and there wasn't even anybody at the desk. There wasn't even anybody within, like, 500 yards of the freaking terminal. And I started walking around the airport trying to find somebody, and I'm like, hey, I'm supposed to be getting on a plane right now and going back to Pittsburgh. And somebody looked at me, and they were like, yeah, there aren't any flights going out right now. You're not going to be getting on a plane anytime soon. And I was pissed. I was angry. And the thought occurred to me that if this wasn't a good example of powerlessness and a good time to start working my first step, I didn't know what was. So I sat down and started writing on my first step. The other thing I started doing is I started calling my sponsor once in a while. And I didn't call him every day. I called him maybe once a week, once every other week. Every time I called him, he talked to me. He didn't tell me he was too busy. He didn't tell me he didn't have time for me. He reached out to me. Every once in a while, he even called me just to, like, see what I was up to. I think I took me about 6 to 9 months to do that first step. And during a break, I made it. I set up a time. I said, John, I want to finish. I want to do my first step. I don't really know what I'm going to get out of it, but I answered the silly questions, and I read the first tradition and wrote a paragraph or two about that, and I went up to his house and I probably spent about 6 hours going through it. And mind you, I had about 3.5 years clean the first time I worked a step this time around. There's never been a time in my recovery that I got more out of doing something that I didn't expect to get anything out of than that time when I worked that first step with my sponsor. He sat there and listened to the things that I had to say, and It wasn't limited to just the first step. It treaded into areas about the fourth step and the third step and the fifth step and the ninth step. And I was kind of all over the place. That happens to us when we don't go to meetings for a long time. And at the end of it, I felt freaking awesome. I don't know what it was. I felt better. And I didn't feel that way the last time I worked the first step, 4 or 5 years before that. It just felt different. And over the period of the next like year or so, I continued to do what I was doing. I was a musician. I toured a lot and had some good times, had some bad times. I kept in touch with John. There was another guy from Indiana, guy named Matt, that he was a lot like me because he was real angry and I was real angry, and I would call him, and we would just bitch at each other back and forth. And that was real therapeutic, because he would bitch about people, and I didn't really know who they were. And I would bitch about my band, and he didn't know who they were. And we would all just bitch about things, and it felt good. You know, we developed a lot of good resentments, and little did I know, I was laying a lot of good groundwork for my fourth step, which, you know, was coming. And I don't remember what exactly he was talking about, but he was really pissed at the police. And he had this brilliant idea. He said, "Let's go to law school and become attorneys. Just fuck the police every chance we get." And I was like, "Yeah, let's do that. That's a good idea." And I don't know. I guess he didn't think I was serious, but I was serious. I really did it. And I went to law school and then became an attorney. And I spend most of my time fucking the police now as often as I can. I said to somebody yesterday, I hate the police more now than I ever did as a junkie. And but that's a story for another time. But so what this process did for me is it started getting me back in touch with NA, and it started getting me back in touch with NA people. And it was pretty much me and my sponsor. And there came a day where I'd had enough of my band for a lot of different reasons, and none of which are really important here. But I quit, and I came home. And I called my sponsor on the way, and I said, "Hey, I'm almost done with that second step. Can we go over that?" And we did. And I don't really know if I got a whole lot out of the second step. It didn't feel like it. And again, I forgot to do those definitions he asked me to do. I think I forgot to do the tradition as well. I wasn't very good at following directions. And he was okay with that. He let me be where I was. And I remember distinctly, I started going to a lot of meetings in Pittsburgh because it's where I was living. I started going to a lot of Pirates games, and I started going to a lot of meetings. The Pirates games really pissed me off because they sucked, and the meetings were like somewhat therapeutic, but I don't really know if I understood what was going on. I went to the Monday night Squirrel Hill meeting to celebrate 4 years. I called my sponsor on the way there, and I said, "John, I don't know how many years I have clean." And it took us about 5 minutes to count backwards and figure it out. And I figured out I had 4 years. And I stood up and I said, "Thank you." And then I gave my little spiel. And really what I wanted to do was I wanted to be like, "Hey, everybody, look at me. I have 4 years clean." Like, you know, "Hey, everyone, pay attention to me." And if you ever been to a Monday night Squirrel Hill meeting, like, no one pays attention to anything there. They just talk amongst each other and have sex in the bathroom. So, of course, nobody paid attention to me, and I caught the resentment and walked out right after I got done sharing. And the reason nobody paid attention to me was because having 4 years really didn't mean jack shit. There are a lot of people in Pittsburgh that have 4 years clean. There's people in Pittsburgh that have 40 years clean. And that's not really the measure of recovery there. And I'm grateful that it's not, because I learned a lot as a result of that. I went from living on the road, going from city to city, and never, ever having to worry about developing a hard, serious, long-term relationship with anybody, because people only knew me for a day at a time. And then I wouldn't see him again for 3 months. And, I mean, to those people, I was like a blast. I was like, "This guy's fun. He doesn't drink, but he's fucking crazy. And, you know, he's fun. He plays in his band, and there's always girls around, and everybody parties all night. And if for some reason, he just stays clean, but he's still fun." Nobody ever really got to know me, and I was a very, very sick individual. When I came home, I didn't have anything to hide behind. I couldn't go on tour. I couldn't run away. I was involved with a relationship with somebody that I didn't know. In fact, I was living with her, and I didn't really know her. And I found out very quickly I didn't like her, but I didn't have anywhere else to live, so I didn't do anything about it. My family didn't really know what to do with me because, like I said, you know, I'd been clean for 4 years without a program. And if anybody's ever done that, it's a very fucking scary place to be. I don't know how close I ever came to using. I know how close I came to killing myself or somebody else. But I don't know how close I ever came to using. And I spent about a year trying to adapt to society and learn how to fit in and how to live like a normal person. And it wasn't very easy. I had a lot of problems. I called my sponsor on more than one occasion and had like a temper tantrum, like screaming and yelling. And He swears he doesn't remember him. I don't know how the fuck he couldn't remember him, dude. I mean, I was a baby. I was yelling at him for, the dumbest shit. And he always listened to me. And he would always say, well, let's step back. Let's take a look at this. He would always talk to me about things that I didn't want to talk about, like my part. He would talk about things like God and spiritual principles. And I didn't really know it at the time, but what he was doing was he was teaching me how to handle my own shit. And I kept calling him regularly. And I started calling him more often because I started having more problems. I have more issues than just being an addict. I have outside issues. I have an issue with depression, and I started to struggle with it. Every time I went over the 31st or the 40th Street Bridge, I just wanted to drive my car off the edge, and I didn't know why. I thought I was working my ass off. I was studying like 4 hours a day for the LSAT exam. It's this thing you got to take to get into law school, and I thought I was working hard. I remember very distinctly, I was going to a lot of meetings, and I was making some friends, and I was kind of like trying to like talk to girls, but not really, because I knew you weren't supposed to date girls in a program, and to this day I firmly believe that. I don't shit where I eat, and I don't shit where I sleep. I don't date people in a program because I don't ever want to give somebody a reason to not want to come to a meeting, and I don't want to ever want to give myself a reason to not want to come to a meeting either. There's plenty of women out there. I don't need to date one in a program, and that's. Ironically, that's something I learned vicariously through my sponsor, not to date women in the program, because I watched him struggle with it, and I watched him hurt over it. I watched him take a lot of shit from it from other people. And I don't learn lessons that way very often, but that was one that I actually did learn from him. And I'm grateful for that, because it was one of those things, like, I didn't have to experience that on my own. Like, I could watch him go through that. I started to get, a funny thing happened, like I got fired from my job, I got accused of an inappropriate relationship with a 16-year-old girl because this guy from AA didn't like me, and he just made up some story and got a couple people to go along with it, and it scared the shit out of me because I didn't know what was going to happen. I knew I didn't do anything wrong, but, I mean, the accusation is enough to fucking ruin somebody, I still haven't let go of that resentment. It'll be on my next 4-step probably. That guy's an asshole. But I started to get better. I moved out on my own. I had a really small apartment. It was about the size of this fire ring, maybe a little bigger. And I worked a lot of steps. In a period of about 8 months, I worked steps 4, 5, 6, and 7. It was the most painful 6 months of my life, and it was the greatest 6 months of my life because I got better. I grew. I went from being a really self-centered, selfish little brat that, you know, didn't understand why I needed to pay attention to anybody else to somebody that could understand where other people were coming from. And one night my sponsor called me, and he was really upset about something. I think it had something to do with a relationship. I'd never had that before, you know, like I'd never had the opportunity to help him, you know, it was always me asking him for help, and he called me, and he was upset, he was hurting, you know, it was a relationship issue, and I don't remember the details, and if he does, and you want to know him, you might be able to ask him, maybe he'll tell you, maybe he won't, I don't know, but I got off the phone, and I remember looking at, I was sitting there with my friend Terry, and I looked at Terry, and I said, I just had something that's never happened to me before, you know, like my sponsor called me and asked me for help, and I was like, it was really uncomfortable, I didn't know what to do. I did my best to tell him stuff that I thought he would say to me, and I told him things like, you know what, John, you're a better person than that, and, you know, if somebody doesn't want to see you for the qualities that you have, then it's their loss, it's not yours, whatever crazy baggage people bring into relationships isn't your fault. And you don't have to sit there and take that shit from somebody. You can walk away. And although it hurts, you know, it might be what's best for you in the end. Now, he did this again a couple days later, and he called me again, and I spent about another hour on the phone with him. This time it didn't feel weird. It felt okay. That was probably about 5 years ago, and since then, there have been many, many times where I've called my sponsor and complained about something or had a problem, and he's talked to me about it, and he's done the same to me. In fact, when I call him, it's, you know, one of the first things I say is, how are you doing? What's going on with you? How's work? Is that guy still being an asshole to you? How's the relationship scene? How are your parents? What I developed is, I learned when I first got here that sponsorship, the only purpose of having a sponsor is to have someone to guide you through the steps. And you know, anybody that knew me 10 years ago, it's not hard to spend more than 15 minutes with me and know that I'm a different person. The steps changed my life, and the steps changed my life because I worked them. I worked them with my sponsor. Anything else I got out of that relationship with my sponsor was a bonus. It wasn't a promise. It wasn't a guarantee. I have a really unique relationship with my sponsor. He's my best friend. My dad died almost 20 years ago. And although my sponsor, and I don't want to insult him by saying he's old like my dad, but, you know, he's only about 8 years older than me. But he's the closest thing I've ever had to a dad. He's the closest thing I've ever had to a male authority figure. He's one of the only people in my life that when he tells me something that hurts and it's hard to hear, my first response wasn't, fuck you. It was, I just sat there quietly and listened to what he had to say. And there's only one other person that's ever been like that with me, and that was my sister, who helped me get clean. So I have a very unique relationship with him, and I don't see that very often with other people that I sponsor. I reach out to them. The first thing I tell anybody that I sponsor is that you don't have to worry about lying to me, because I'm not going to call you out on your lies. I'm not going to force you to tell the truth. I'm not going to take you from step four back to step one. I'm not going to control you. I'm not going to tell you who to date. I'm not going to tell you where to work or what bars to go in or stay out of. I'm not here to tell you how to live your life. I'm here to show you how to live a different way of life through example. And if you want what I have and you're willing to do the work to get it, I'll help you work steps. That's the extent of my relationship with people I sponsor today. Different people work their programs differently. I've had sponsors that yelled at me and swore at me, and sometimes that's what I needed. Today, John's never done that to me. He's never once yelled at me. I was in the back of his boat one time, and he yelled at me because I wouldn't let go. But that's another story. But it's been a really unique relationship. It's almost like, you know, I get him, and he gets me. And when I talk to him, like, he knows where I'm coming from. And I don't have to, like, spend 20 minutes explaining the groundwork of a story. I just have to say, John, here's what I did. And here's what happened, and here's how I feel about it. What do you think I should do? And you know what? I've probably asked John what I should do 1,000 times, and he's never once told me. He's never once told me, why don't you do this? Why don't you do that? He always says, what do you think you should do? And no matter what I said, he's never told me I was wrong. He said, I've had situations like that. This is what I did. But he's never told me how to live my life. He's never told me how to work my program. What he has done is he's shown me through example how to work a program and how to help people. I live in Ohio now. It is completely different. It's not Pittsburgh. It's not Pittsburgh recovery. It's not like going to Beachwood every Tuesday night. It's not going to Shady Group on Saturday night. It's not the same. It's completely fucking different. And I don't feel comfortable there. I've been there for almost 5 years now, and I go to meetings regularly, and I don't know what it is. Like, I have tried to let these people into my life. I've tried to get close to them. Maybe I haven't. Maybe I'm lying to you guys. I don't know. I'll figure it out next time I go through the steps, I guess. But there's something about coming back here and being with people that were here, like people that helped me put myself back together, that really makes me feel at home. And I don't know. Maybe I need to fall apart out there and really have to rely on those people. I don't know. But I've never experienced a relationship like the one I have with my sponsor. He's given me the ability to be a different person, and he's shown me that it's possible for me to become a different person, and that's not something anybody told me when I got here. You know, people just said, hey, if you don't want to get high anymore, we'll show you how to do it. Nobody said I was going to become a better person. In the first 6 years I was here that I was clean, I didn't become a better person. I just learned how to be a better asshole. And I learned how to insult people better. I learned how to hurt people's feelings. I learned how to think I'm better than everybody else because I don't get high. I don't think I'm better than anybody else because I don't get high today. One of the things that frustrates me more than anything else is when I hear people use the term the revolving door of Narcotics Anonymous, and I'm guilty of using it myself. And they talk about people that just come in and out, and they don't get clean, and they just keep getting high. I'm very fortunate. I've never had that problem. Every time I've tried to get clean, I got clean. But the one thing I know about those people that keep coming in and out is I applaud them. I give them all the gratitude in the world because they keep trying. I don't give up on people today until they're in the ground. And even when they go in the ground, I still think about them at the end of every meeting. I'm willing to do whatever I can to help somebody today. I'm willing, you want to call me at 4 o'clock in the morning, I may or may not answer the phone, but I will call you back. If you send me an email and you need help, I will return it. You approach me at a meeting and you want to sit down and talk to me for 45 minutes afterwards in a freezing fucking cold, I'll sit there and talk to you. I will do whatever I can to help somebody else because I know at the end of the day it helps me. And I know it's the right thing to do. And I know without somebody there to do that for me, I wouldn't be here today. I would not be standing in front of you. You know, Sarah's a real good friend of mine. Well, Sarah used to be a really good friend of mine. Honestly, I haven't seen her in about 8 years other than once. But she's somebody I have a lot of respect for. And I sat down next to her and I looked at her and I said, 9 years ago, did you ever think we'd still be here? And she said, no, I was only here for the summer. I was here to get better so I could go back to school and party. And I said, I was only here for a year to get off probation. And then I didn't want to be here anymore. And something happened on the way to the office, I guess, you know, or something happened on the way to the bar. And I kept walking. I didn't go in that door. There's a lot more things, and I don't mean to stand up here and sound like I'm, you know, like I'm telling you guys I have the greatest sponsor in the world. But you know, in my opinion, I do. What I love the most about him is he tells me when he's wrong, and he points it out to me. And I said, he says, here's what I did, Jason, and I think I screwed up. And what do you think I should do differently? And I look at him and I say, I don't know, John, what do you think you should do? I can't tell you how many times John said something to me. And I said, John, that's fucking awesome. Where'd you hear that? He goes, you said it to me. And vice versa. And I don't know. It's a very unique relationship. And it's one that I cherish. I don't think I've ever been closer to another man in my life. In fact, I guarantee I haven't. I've never had another man in my life that gave a shit about me and cared that much about me. I've never had another guy that went out of his way to make sure I was okay and to make sure that I knew that he cared. It's not like material stuff or anything like that. Although, you know, you pay attention to John long enough, he does have a bit of a material thing going on. He's a bit of a shopper. If anybody that doesn't know him real well, he shops well. I don't get a very many options to make fun of him, but I went to Ocean City with him, me and a couple other addicts, and we went to this. It was an intimate apparel store for men, and John spent an hour and 30 minutes in there buying underwear. That's impressive. I've never met a guy that could do that. I mean, that's fucking impressive. And you know what? He's okay with it. He's like, yeah, I look damn good in my boxer shorts, and. I've never seen him in his boxer shorts. We don't have that kind of relationship, but I'm very blessed to be where I am today. I have a life that I could have never ever asked for. All I wanted when I got here was to get off probation and not go to jail anymore. And somehow along the way, a lot of really amazing shit happened to me. And I tell my sponsor all the time. I say, John, I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for you. I owe everything I have to you. And he looks at me and he's like, you know, you don't get it, Jason. You don't get it because you haven't been there yet. He goes, you don't understand that, like, everything you give to me, I get something. I get just as much from it. And I never understood that until I started sponsoring guys, and I see what he means now. Three of the four sponsees that I have deleted my number from their phone, and they won't return any of my phone calls. I know one of them's still alive. The other two I don't know about. And one of them is using, but he still keeps in touch with me. And that's what I give to my sponsees. I tell them routinely, I don't care whether you're clean or not. I care about you. And my love for you is not conditional on whether or not you want to work a 12-step program or whether or not you want to show up at meetings. And I don't even give a shit what fellowship you go to. I care about you because you're a human being. And I'm not going to give up on you. I have one guy, he apologizes to me every time he calls me. And I tell him, I say, Rod, don't fucking apologize to me. Like, you don't understand what you do for me. And you know what? He doesn't get it. He doesn't understand. And I know that because for about 8 years, I didn't understand what John was getting from me. I don't know if those guys will ever get it. I don't know if they'll ever get clean. I don't know if they'll ever get better. I don't know if they'll ever want to work steps again. I don't know. I do know this, though. When they call me, I answer the phone. And when they tell me they need help, I help them. I do whatever I can for recovering addicts, because without recovering addicts, I wouldn't have what I have and I wouldn't be where I am. Now, most importantly, if you didn't get anything out of anything that I've said here tonight, like Silvio said, I don't represent NA. I just represent me, Jason. More importantly than that, I really appreciate you guys for giving me a place to come and say my name's Jason and I'm an addict. Thanks.
Next speaker up, actually I met him 3 years ago today here on this Saturday at this retreat, so he's become a real good friend, John Kay from Du Bois, PA, from Treasure Isle, PA. There he is.
I'm John, I'm an addict. Gotta get my NA blue flashlight out here. I don't know, I guess from listening to the person who just spoke, I have an idea that I've been around here a little bit. And I don't typically have a loss of words. Or a problem sharing. In fact, I'm told that whenever I give my lead, I almost never say the same thing. There's some bits and pieces of my story that are the same, but I'm very frequently different. I ain't a dinosaur, brother. If you want to refer to me as something, you can maybe call me a warrior. I survived many battles, but I ain't extinct and I ain't old. I wish at this moment that I could show everyone sitting here what's in my heart. I've had the opportunity in my time of being around here, of doing this quite a few times, and maybe have done it on much grander scales. I don't know that there's probably any more precious moment for me to have done this than right now. Any of those grander scales that I may have done this on. To me, it's just something special for me, because this retreat is a big part of my heart, because I've been here from day one. There's only two of us left that have been here every single year. In 1990, I went to my very first convention. And at that convention, my sponsor at that time was the chair and the person that was the main speaker. Took a moment when she opened up. She was from New York, leading in Pittsburgh, and asked the women that she sponsored to stand up. And they stood up and everyone applauded. And they started to sit down, and she said, "No, stay up. Something more important is about to happen." And she said, "I want the women that these women sponsor to stand up." And they stood up, and everybody applauded. She said, "Now I want the women that these women sponsor to stand up." And I believe it was something in the order of six generations stood up. And the irony of that day was, is she was celebrating 24 years that day, and it wasn't pre-planned. There was 24 women standing up at the end of that. And she went on to explain what was important about that, is that that is the essence of how it works. That is the backbone of this program. And I wholeheartedly believe that. There's nothing more important to me in here than sponsorship. The men that I sponsor, I love genuinely. I love wholeheartedly. I've had to deal with... one time a guy got jealous because he felt that I loved one of the other guys more. And it wasn't like a gay thing. And I sit down and talk to him and just explain, you know, it ain't about that. I said, the reason we don't have the relationship that I have with that man that you're referring to is you haven't done the work with me like that man has done the work with me. When we do the work that goes along with sponsorship, you develop intimacy. Now, I'm not talking about sexual intimacy. I'm just talking about genuine intimacy in the real world. Another human being. Opening myself up. I mean, think about some of the stuff that we've done. You know, to open up and share some of that stuff with another person. There's a lot of stuff I did that I swore I'd take to the grave. No one would ever hear again. The person you just heard is probably one or two people that probably know most of it that's alive. Because one of the things about being around, sometimes you lose sponsors. When I got here, I came to my first NA meeting 2 years before I came and stayed. And I'm not saying that I had anything because I went to two meetings. Someone in the neighborhood knew someone in the neighborhood that went to these meetings. And they called him and he agreed to meet me. And I went to the meeting and I asked him to be my sponsor because he taught me enough that night to understand what a home group and sponsorship was about. So I asked him to be my sponsor. I met him a week later at the same meeting, and I never went back. When I got back here this time, I still had that man's number, and I called him and asked to be my sponsor, and he said the same thing. It'd be an honor, and he met me in a meeting, and then I went into rehab, and he really wasn't part of the rooms anymore, but I didn't know that. And when I was in rehab, he said, "You know, I think you really ought to think about maybe looking for another sponsor, because I really don't go to meetings anymore." And I had a guy, my eye on a guy that I saw at some of the meetings I went prior to getting into the rehab. He was always at the door at the largest meeting that this region's ever had. It doesn't exist anymore. We used to get a couple hundred people at this meeting. It was a Sunday go-to meeting in Pittsburgh. He's always at the door, and he always had the heart for the newcomer, and if he saw, he always went to him and talked to him after the meeting. And he was always real active. He was always at the podium. He was always being asked to share at meetings, give his lead. And I picked him for a lot of right reasons. I picked him for a lot of wrong reasons. Some of the stuff that Jason talked about, you know, with his experience in sponsorship. The wrong reasons were I wanted to be at a podium being asked to speak like he was every other day. You know, I thought I had a right to be someone important and entitled. And part of my story is I went to the penitentiary clean, came home clean. When I came home from that, I thought that home group, I was entitled to be at that podium and share. Never got asked to share at that meeting. And I understand today that's because God understood that I wasn't ready for that. Me and him did a lot of work, and he was my sponsor for, I don't remember how many years, I guess it was the first 7-8 years. And he was there. When I was in the penitentiary, he accepted collected phone calls for me. He's the only person I managed to get into the penitentiary when I was there to do an H&I lead. He never, like, shamed me, put me down. You know, we got busy. We worked on some steps. But I didn't have that two-way street with that sponsor. At least that was my perception. You know what? I want to tell you a little joke. I help people with their hearing, and this is a joke that has to do with hearing. This is where I got it. There's a man and woman that used to go fishing all the time, and when they get to the lake, they put the boat in, and after they got the boat in, she'd get in the boat, and she'd undress, and she'd fuck his brains out. Pardon my language, I don't like to swear, but it's the purpose of the joke. And some years later, she got a mailer about free hearing test. She went and had her hearing checked, and she found out she had a hearing loss. She got hearing aids, and they went fishing the next day. And she gets in the boat, and he says, up or down? And she took the oar and whacked him out of the boat and took off with the boat. And he caught up to her later, and he said, what the hell was all that about? She said, all these years I've been thinking you're saying fuck or drown, and you're saying up or down. My point behind that joke is perception. She had a handicap, so her ability to perceive was a little bit distorted. When I got here, I came in here with a handicap. My perception was a little bit distorted. I needed somebody else's eyes to help me see myself, because I wasn't really capable of seeing myself really all that clear. In fact, I wasn't capable of seeing myself at all. In fact, I probably looked somewhat like that. My eyes all bugged out. I didn't realize that when I looked at it when I hurried up to change to get down here and put some more clothes on. That guy's insane. But perception, my perception was really, really distorted. And my sponsor helped me to clear up some of that perception. I look at its sponsorship kind of like, do you ever drive down the highway, especially out in an area like this? And you get a whole bunch of stations that are kind of fuzzy, you get bits and pieces, and then you get that one station that just comes in loud and clear. That's been the role of sponsorship for me. The sponsors I've had have always been that one clear station that's loud and clear. And the thing that I've learned that sometimes hurts and is painful is we sometimes take granted that people will be here tomorrow. And they're not always here tomorrow. You know, that first sponsor, I in my own mind thought that I didn't think he was capable of using. I had him so high on his pedestal, like he was infallible or incapable of using. When we started this retreat, I was the chair the first year. I was responsible for bringing speakers in, law speakers, and one of them was the main speaker. And the main speaker that year brought this gentleman. And I talked to, it was his sponsor. I talked to him, and he was talking about relationships with men, and I was really intrigued, and I got called away. I couldn't finish the conversation. The next day, one of the speakers for sponsorship or relationships didn't show up, and the program chair said, "Hey, you got any suggestions?" And I pointed right at this guy that was the main speaker sponsor. And I was one of the only shops I went to. And during the meeting, he asked for a volunteer, and no one raised their hand. I was the only one sitting there that he knew, and he said, "Come here." I stood up, and he talked about in AA how we shake hands, and he shook my hand, and when we're new in NA, we give these three-foot-away hugs, and then at some point, we give a genuine, real hug, and then at some point, this is okay, and he kissed me on the cheek. And that rocked my world. Now, I'm not talking about sexually. It rocked my world because I had relationships like that down in Pittsburgh where I came from. And when I moved up here, I was keeping all the men out. And I felt like I should ask him to be my sponsor. And I prayed about it and I talked to some people. And I realized the only thing wrong with the sponsor that I had at the time was as I moved up here and I wasn't calling him on a regular basis. And I started calling him on a regular basis 6 months later. He said, "Man, I can't sponsor you no more." And I was like, what's wrong with me? That's our first thought. Ain't that where we go? Something's wrong with me. And I said, "What are you talking about?" He said, "Man, I've been using it for 6 months." He says, "You're calling me on a regular basis all the time." And he says, "I'm giving you good stuff and I can't save my own ass." Went down to Pittsburgh the next day and took him to a meeting. And when we went in, the body language was all there. Didn't say, "Hey, I'm doing good, life's all that." And when we were walking into the meeting, someone said, "Hey, how you doing?" And he lifted his head and said, "I used." They laughed at him, slapped him on the shoulder and walked into the meeting. And that was the denial process. I mean, that guy was just as guilty as me because what I said, I didn't think that the guy would ever use. And I learned a whole lot from that process. And it, you know, it isn't about being on a pedestal in here. None of us are any better or worse than each other. It's all about life or death in here. That's why I stay. It's not why I came, but that's why I stay. Because I understand it's about living or dying today. Maybe not necessarily sometimes physically, but sometimes it's about whether I'm living or dying spiritually, mentally, emotionally. And I need others in my life, like Jason was talking about. He's not the only sponsee I call. I have a two-way relationship with all my sponsees. That first sponsor that I had never, ever called me. And I just had an issue with that. And that's part of the reason why I told the thing about perception. I at that time, I wasn't capable of seeing that I only worked a half a block away from him. He probably just figured, well, I'll talk to him when he stops in to see me after work. Because I'd always stop in after work and wave at him, "Hey, I'm okay," or "Hey, I need to talk." You know, my perception was distorted. You know, maybe he would have actually called me. I don't know. Never asked him. Actually, I should probably ask him. We talk sometimes today. He's back in the room staying, and I'm ecstatic about that. Happy as lark to see that he's doing okay. What I did learn from that, though, is that I also, kind of like the speaker was talking about, you know, the boundaries and walls. I also need to protect myself in here, too. Just because I've been around doesn't mean that I'm some kind of guru or I'm above anybody else. I've learned that humility for me is like recognizing what my assets are and what my liabilities are and owning them and being okay with who I am. So, he relapsed, and my self-centered nature was I wanted to hang on to him. I tried to hang on to that relationship and sponsorship, and I talked to a bunch of people, and I realized that all I was doing was being self-centered. And I went down to a convention in Ocean City, and on the way back, the guy that was the sponsor to Maine that I was referring to that came up here lived in Baltimore, and I stopped his house because we continued to have a relationship after I met him. And we had known each other for a period of time at that point. And I knocked on his door. He opened it up and he looked at me and with a smile, happy to see me because he didn't know I was coming. And I had a couple words come out of my mouth, and it was, "Are you willing?" And he smiled even bigger and said, "I wonder what took you so long." The coin that Jason said that I handed to him earlier, I don't know if anyone in here knows what an infinity coin is, or if anyone's ever seen one, but they're the coins that we put in caskets when people die clean. I had 7 years when that sponsor relapsed, because when Randy became my sponsor, shortly after that, I celebrated 8 years, and he came up to do my first step work with him. And it's not the norm. He drove from Baltimore to me, partly because it was my anniversary. He wanted to come up and celebrate, and it was an opportunity for us to work steps. And he gave me this coin. And I looked at it, and I was happy. I thought it was an 8 on it. If anyone knows it's the infinity symbol, it's an 8 sidewards. And he went on to explain that he was worried, I think, he was being morbid. And he explained to me real quickly. He says, "It ain't about it. I think you're dying." He said, "In a period of time that I've known you," he said, "I'm giving this to you because I believe that you're one of the few that will make it to the end of their life and never, ever use again." And at the time, I didn't realize how profound of a thing that was to lay on someone. Today, I'm really honored that he believed in me in that much. And I hope that I'm able to uphold that belief that he, you know, bestowed on me. And the coin's real sentimental to me. And some years ago, what I did was at a world convention, and it wasn't planned this way. The guy that's now my sponsor was the main speaker, and I, for some reason, felt inclined to ask him to hold this while he was on stage. And he held it on stage, and ever since then, if I'm somewhere around and someone in the family speaking, I usually give them that coin. Some years ago, my sponsor Randy ended up with cancer. And like Jason said about believing in having the right sponsor and having a passion, I believe that passion is a big part of our program. If you don't believe you have the right home group, find a new home group. If you do not believe that's the best home group for you, find a new home group. If you don't believe that you have the right sponsor, or the best sponsor for you, find a new sponsor. Because you only get one of you. I only get one of me. And I was settled for all my life, instead of going after what I really deserve. Because I don't believe my God wants me to settle for. I believe my God wants me to have all I can have while I'm here. I also believe He wants me to be a servant. Our main speaker tonight talked about purpose. I believe the purpose is our deep sense of gratitude, how we express our deep sense of gratitude for being here, or the opportunity that we have. So anyway, that sponsor, I got to walk through about 15 months of him having cancer. And die. I can remember going down to Baltimore's Free State Convention, and the year before he was the chair of that convention, and they honored him and asked him to do a reading, and me and a couple other brothers in the family had to help him on the stage. And after he got off stage, he went out, and he went out to the back of the room, and one of my other brothers came in, and he said, "Hey, Randy wants you outside," and I went out, and I sat down, and in 14 months of him fighting this, I never once seen him shed a tear or complain about having this next disease of cancer. And he started weeping. He said, "I just want my life back." And it was that moment I knew he didn't have time, much time left. I knew that he knew he was dying and he wasn't telling anybody. It was a month later he died. And we had the two-way relationship. Sometimes I sponsored him, sometimes he sponsored me. And I believe this is my own belief, I believe sponsorship's a two-way street. Jason's real good about reminding me of an old Honda Civic that I had. The floorboards were rusted out, and I took a soda can box and laid it in there and put putty in. I was driving around, and doing that in the middle of winter in the snow under my car. Keeping me grounded in humility, remember where I came from. We show up here and do work. Life happens, and I couldn't imagine that I'd have the things I have or the career that I do, and be able to have the relationships I have. I'm grateful for the career I have. I complain about my boss. I love my boss. He's also a friend. He has issues. He's also in recovery. He mentioned about that. And Jason has seen me in my underwear. And he did do those definitions. Actually, we did them right then and there. That's the first thing we did. But the sponsor that I'm talking about to die, that's who I did the core work with. I mean, I really opened up and got intimate. And when I did sponsorship, when I did steps, I think we come in here and there's like different levels of willingness that we go through. Because when I went through the steps with this other sponsor, my willingness wasn't really there and I still had some walls up. When Randy became my sponsor, I had no walls up anymore, and I was wholeheartedly willing. And he was also the right person for me to have gone through and done that. And he taught me about how the principles. We talk about, we admit we were powerless over addiction, that our life had become unmanageable. That's step one. And if you look in the blue book, there's a whole bunch of stuff written after that. It's a collective opinion about the italicized words. We admit we were powerless. When you add your own view, it changes a little bit about what's written after that because now that conscience is a little bit bigger and broader. But I never understood that there were spiritual principles behind those italicized words. And he's the one who showed me that. He showed me how to apply acceptance in my life. He helped me to understand what acceptance in the first step is. He helped me to understand what surrender in the first step is and how I live it out in the real world, as well as in the rooms. You know, the stuff that goes on in the rooms, for me, I was all training ground to deal with the stuff that happens out in the real world. Not that this isn't the real world, the bigger world. And the stuff happens out there too. And if I can't handle the stuff that happens in here, I'm certainly not going to deal with the stuff that happens out there. For the last 10 years, I've been taking care of both my parents. My parents had me when they were in the late 40s. And I never in my wildest imagined knew I'd become their parent. That blindsided me. To become your parent's parent. I wouldn't have had the ability to do that if it wasn't for what I learned in here, how to apply the principles and practice patience and tolerance and acceptance and surrender. And I would have tried to control the whole thing and screwed the hell out of it and practice self-centeredness, and they'd probably be dead by now because I wouldn't have done the things that I needed to do or would have just said, screw it. It'll be what it'll be. I had the ability to show up and be there for them. You know, there's just, I can't, this journey's been amazing. And sponsorship. When I moved out of Indiana, or when I moved out of Pittsburgh to Indiana, we're going to give up a little bit of Jason's dirty laundry, since he gave up some about my boxer shorts. When I moved to Indiana, and met Jason for the first time. Jason was a teenager, and he had a purple mohawk about 2 feet high right down the middle of his head. And he wasn't the person that typically out on the streets I would even said hi to. One of my dreams was always to have kids, and somehow that's eluded me. And what he said, sometimes relationships and sponsorship, when we do that kind of work, get to that level. And Jason is like a son to me. He's like a son that I've never had. And I'm fortunate and blessed to have a few people in my life like that. And I'm real fortunate and blessed to have a lot of wonderful, wonderful men in my life. Without the men that are part of my life, I wouldn't be who I am today. Because they're my window to God. You know, and I have to practice open-mindedness and willingness in order to receive what God is trying to show me. And it often comes through those guys. Sometimes it's my sponsor. You know, there's one of my passions is H&I, and years ago there was a gentleman that came into the rooms and didn't really get to know him a whole lot, but he relapsed. And when I was going into H&I, he showed up at the meeting and he asked me to sponsor him. And I explained to him that, you know, our guidelines, we can't really do that, and I gave some suggestions, and I said, when you get out, call me, and he did. Yeah, I don't know if anyone's read the IP sponsorship, the orange one. I believe it's IP13. Talks about in there that we're not financial officers or institutions or anything, and he came out and he really applied himself, and he started doing all the work, and he was calling me, and my job took me out of time. And he had issues with being able to like apply for an apartment, you know, qualify or whatever you have to do whenever you do that. And I let him stay in the apartment that I was renting. I talked to the landlord, and I said, you know, keep my name on the lease, and I'm okay with that, and I'll be responsible for it. And he lived there for a couple of years, and during that time, you know, he never burned me while he was there. His son moved in with him because he saw something different in that man. And getting to see stuff like that, and I'm not saying that's because of me. What's the beautiful part that I'm trying to express is being able to be a vehicle for God to work through us, for that type of stuff to take place. You know, it's from the sponsors I've had that I've learned how to become a man. And it's a combination of everything that I've gotten from them that I translate to the guys I sponsor. And sometimes it's not necessarily the guys I've had that have sponsored me. Because sometimes just the term sponsor, sometimes my sponsor ain't even my sponsor. Sometimes it's the guy I pull up because I'm having a hard time that I talk to and he's got the answers that moment. Sometimes they're just sponsoring me for that moment. The thing Jason was talking about, the relationship with Chris, that was 5 years ago. And he had all the great things to say that day. I knew he would. You know, when we stick around here, sometimes we know who will have the answers. And my experience has been that when stuff happens in my life, often God sends a messenger, and it's usually someone calling me saying, hey, I'm having this problem, and usually in talking to them about that problem, I get the answer that I need. Sometimes I need to pick up the phone and call my sponsor. I can't really... Okay, I'm getting a light. Yeah, a couple minutes. I'd like to tell you all my stories about sponsorship, but we'd be here till like 6 a.m. in the morning. And, my mind just went to earlier today. I got introduced to this young man, and he knows a girl that for a period of time was my stepdaughter, and she's out there using really bad right now and in a jackpot. And I don't know, that's been on my mind today, and I'm not really sure what I'm going to do. What I do know that I'm going to do is talk to men that are part of my life. Maybe get some females input, because, you know, one of the things about being around here is I've been able to develop relationships with females today, and it'll be about sex. And I have some really wonderful females that I rely on today, too. My mind kind of went blank. So what I want to do is just tell everybody here that I'm glad that you're here tonight. And if you're not passionate about your program, no one else is going to be that way, do it for you. You know, I've gained what I have today by doing the footwork and being passionate about my program, and recognizing that I was given a gift at one time, and I really, really disrespected that gift by everything I did through my active addiction. And I'll try to understand how or why I got it. I just today I look at the gift, at addiction, as a gift, because I love my life. I love who I am. I don't want to be you anymore. And I'm happy with who I've become. And I have relationships that are part of my life today that are beyond my wildest imagination. They say you're lucky if you have one true friend in your life, and I'm blessed with many. I mean, where else can you get that? When you go outside the rooms, you can't bond with someone instantly like you do in here. When we connect in here, you hang out with someone two or three times, man, you're your best friend already. That has a lot to deal with, you know, some of the stuff that we share. That intimacy, you know. We don't go out with our neighbor and say, yeah, I was at Walmart last night. I, you know, stole some electronics, or I cheated on my wife. You know, we do that in here, though. That's how we get well. The guys that are here that I do sponsor, I love you very, very deeply, and I am very grateful to be part of your life. Thanks for allowing me to share.
Okay, let's give John Kay and Jason F. a big hand. Terrific message. Okay, can someone please...